The eagle has landed.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
I consider myself the luckiest man.
I have a dream today.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Hello, welcome to Speaking of History, the podcast that has a focus on education, technology, and history. My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri, and you're listening to podcast episode number 126, being recorded on the evening of December 9th, 2007. Well, today's podcast is a response to an email that I received from Jessica, who is a middle school history teacher in Illinois, and she saw on our classroom webpage that we're doing some activities this week with Lewis and Clark, and she asked me to describe a little bit about the projects and the activities that we do in class, and I thought that instead of just emailing her back specifically, this would be a good podcast for anybody that might be teaching about Lewis and Clark, and there are obviously tons and tons of different things you can do with Lewis and Clark. There are so many different resources out there. I'm going to talk about several that we use in our specific classroom here in Liberty, but there are tons and tons of things out there, especially because of the recent 200-year anniversary of the expedition. So I'm going to talk about some of my favorites, and I'd be more than happy to have anybody add to this discussion. You can go ahead and leave a comment on our blog. That is at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com, or you can also email me at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Well, first of all, there's lots of videos available about the Lewis and Clark expedition. I'm going to talk about just several of them that we use in our classroom. The first one that I want to talk about is the one that I've used every year for the last, I think, probably about 4 or 5 years, and that's Lewis and Clark Great Journey West. Some of you may remember back about 5 or 6 years ago, there was an IMAX film about Lewis and Clark, and this is the actual IMAX film. Obviously, it's been reduced down to a normal size screen, but this is just an incredible video created by National Geographic. It's about 45 minutes long, very, very appealing as far as the images and the story. I think they do a good job of talking about some of the major highlights of the expedition, and it's just an absolutely gorgeous film to watch. I show it to my students, and they enjoy it as well. And we have the DVD version at school, and it also includes a special feature on how they filmed it. And sometimes, kind of depending on where we're at with time in class, I'll show that to my students as well. That's about a 15-minute special about how they trained the grizzly bear that's in it, and you know, how did they try and make it so that they showed the canoe scenes going down the river so that they didn't tip, and how many times they had to do it, and things like that. So it's really a neat DVD to have. If I only had to show, or if I could only show one DVD about Lewis and Clark, I would probably show that one. It's Lewis and Clark, Great Journey West by National Geographic. And I have all these resources that are available on the show notes as well, so you can click on there and see where you can purchase those. Another DVD that I've used in the past that's really good is by the History Channel, and this one is entitled Technology of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. And this one features the gadgets and the things that they had along with them, like the air gun. They have a really interesting description of a portable boat that we can't actually seem to find, but we know that they had, where they kind of had this like shell that was made out of metal, and they could then put different kinds of like animal hides over the top and basically make a boat out of that. But it's got a lot of really neat descriptions of you know, the really cutting edge things that they took on this expedition. And one of the things I tell my students is it's hard for us to imagine what it would be like for them to be journeying into this unknown territory. And in a lot of ways, it'd be like if we were traveling to the moon today. So they did have very cutting edge technology, even though it might not seem like that today. And this video does a good job of describing the different things that they took along with them. As far as other resources, we did use something this year from a book called 20 Plays for U.S. History Classes, and that's by Walsh Publishing. That's Walsh, W-A-L-C-H. And we've used this book a couple times already. It has a variety of different historical plays, and they're written out so that you can tell which person does which piece of dialogue. And they're really written for junior high. I don't know if you'd really want to use this with maybe a senior high class, but probably junior high or middle school. And it has a variety of different historical plays throughout American history. And what I do is I print off a copy for each student, and that's allowed according to the rights in the book. And then I have certain parts underlined for certain individuals, and typically there might range from maybe 10 or 15 different speaking roles for each play, which usually works out pretty well, because if I have a class of about 30 people, some people aren't going to want to necessarily be reading one of the parts. So typically it works out fairly well, and it's kind of a neat way to bring that historical event to life. My students like it. We always talk about trying to be a little bit over the top as far as saying the parts to make it interesting. I have thought about actually taping it and using that in a podcast, but I would have to get permission from the publisher, and I've not done that yet. But that's called 20 Plays for U.S. History Classes, and I have the link on there if you'd like to see where you can purchase that book as well. As far as books, I usually have all the books that have anything to do with Lewis and Clark pulled from our library here in school, so their students can see some of the things available. We have a pretty good collection of things specifically on the Lewis and Clark expedition. The one book that I always tell my students that if I could suggest that they read one about Lewis and Clark, it's the one by Stephen Ambrose, Undaunted Courage. And I actually encourage my parents in our newsletter that I send out each week when I talk about the Lewis and Clark expedition. I actually say if they want to read one really good book about Lewis and Clark, to read that one. So that's one of my favorite books. It's actually probably, I think, the best Lewis and Clark book, just because I like the conversational style that Ambrose uses in all of his writing. And I have had some students actually read it on that recommendation, and it's probably a little bit heavy for some 8th graders, but for the most part, I think that it's something that most 8th graders can handle. I do tell them that at the beginning, to kind of fight through the beginning a little bit. I know when I read it the first time, it seemed like they were talking about the ancestry of Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, and it seemed to be a little bit slow, but then once it actually got into the expedition, it was something that was really, really easy to read. So Undaunted Courage by Stephen Ambrose, if you could read one book about Lewis and Clark, I would suggest that one. One activity we've done the last couple years, we just did this last week, was a text messaging exercise with Lewis and Clark. I try and find ways that I can include modern culture into the teaching of American history, and this was a popular activity last year, and so we've brought it back again this year. Basically, what I do is I have the students think about what if they had the ability to text message Thomas Jefferson back in Monticello while they're on the Cora Discovery Expedition. So, for example, I have three events from which they have to text message and create a dialogue back and forth with Thomas Jefferson. The first event is the time when they think they're going to come over the ridge and they're going to see the valley leading into the Pacific Ocean, and instead they see the Rocky Mountains, and they realize it's going to be a much longer expedition, and they're going to have to do a lot more work to actually reach their goal of reaching the Pacific. How heartbreaking that must have been, how intimidating that must have been. So that's the first event. The second event is when they finally do reach the Pacific Ocean, and they have to respond back on how they feel about finally seeing the Pacific. And then the third one, I allow them to pick an individual event of their choice from the expedition. So this gives them a little bit of ownership in the exercise, and they can be creative about what other event they think would be really important enough to text message back immediately to Thomas Jefferson. So I give them a worksheet, and it has these three different areas highlighted, and then I do give them a glossary. I was able to go online and just find a really simple glossary of different text messaging acronyms, and I've taken out all the ones that might be inappropriate for school, and I allowed them to use that as kind of a basic starting point, but then most of them use their own text messaging language when they do the exercise. And what I have them do is I have them create basically two columns. I have them create the dialogue between themselves and Thomas Jefferson, and in the title of the worksheet, I say that, you know, this is Thomas Jefferson's your new BFF, you know, best friend forever, things like that. But what I have him create is two columns. One is the actual text messaging language, and then they have the English translation for old people like me on the other side of the page so that I can actually see the exact dialogue of what they're trying to say. And again, obviously, everything needs to be school appropriate, but they get a kick out of it. They're able to use their text messaging language, and this comes up a lot in different, you know, educational technology conferences and things about, you know, whether or not we should be embracing their text messaging language. But it is pretty incredible that they've created a very efficient and a different way of communicating, and allowing them to kind of use this in the classroom setting is kind of fun. So again, that's something we've done the last 2 years. We pick out three different events. You could definitely modify that to any type of situation that you want. I think it's kind of neat for the Lewis and Clark Expedition because you have an interested party in Thomas Jefferson that would be at Monticello really wanting to know what's happening with the expedition at any given time. And so it kind of creates not really a normal, but a realistic desire to communicate back and forth in real time. The last thing that I do for the Lewis and Clark unit, and if you look on our lesson plans, I know some of you look at our lesson plans each week, it just had down special activity. And the reason I put down special activity is because it's kind of a surprise. I do it every year. I've done it every year for the last, I think, 5 years. So some of them that have older brothers and sisters usually tell them about it. But what I do on our special activity day for Lewis and Clark is I come dressed as one of the members of the Corps of Discovery. And this started about 5 years ago. Missouri was getting ready to celebrate the 200-year anniversary of the expedition, and there was an application you could fill out as a teacher to obtain some funding to create some type of activity around the Corps of Discovery. And what a lot of teachers did was write grants so that they could have their students actually go to watch the IMAX film or possibly buy some different books or things on the Lewis and Clark expedition. What I told them that I'd use the $500 for was to purchase an authentic outfit that I could then use every year in the Corps of Discovery unit. So what I did was I researched, once I got the grant and I got the $500, I researched what they would have worn, and I was able to find probably what's considered to be the Bible of reenactors for Lewis and Clark. It's a book named Tailor-Made, Trail-Worn, Army Life, Clothing, and Weapons of the Corps of Discovery. And this book is basically a coffee table style book, many illustrations, but it goes into great detail about what they actually wore. So, for example, there's an entire chapter about headgear. There's an entire chapter about footwear. They go into a lot of detail about what they wore, look into a lot of the research on what they purchased before they left on the expedition, things like that. So I use that book as a starting point. And then here in Liberty, we have a store called James County Mercantile, which is a place that creates Civil War clothing for reenactors really all over the country. People send in, they've got a very active online ordering process where basically you say what your measurements are and what type of clothing you want, and then there's people within the Liberty community that actually sew those for you and then mail them out. So I went down and talked to them, and I was able to purchase a hat, a hunting frock, a waistcoat, a flannel shirt, some pants, some moccasins, a wooden canteen, a powder horn, a plate, a striker for starting a fire, a mucket, which is kind of like a metal tin can that you use to heat up things. And I was able to purchase all of those for the $500. And then each year I dress up as one of the members of the Corps of Discovery and come to school dressed like that. And the first couple years I did it, I tried to be as close as I could to William Clark. And William Clark had very red hair. And so I would buy this washable hair gel and make my hair look red. And then, you know, as I was trying to be William Clark, it made it maybe a little bit more realistic that I was William Clark. And 1 year we had parent-teacher conferences on the same day that I was planning to do this. And I decided, what the heck, I'll just go to parent-teacher conferences after school got out dressed as William Clark. But the scary thing was some people did not make any comment about me dressed like that. I mean, I'm wearing a hunting frock and, you know, I mean, I totally look like I'm in character for the Lewis and Clark expedition. And some parents, I don't know if they were just, you know, scared to maybe say something or ask about it. I received quite a few, you know, really favorable comments about what I was wearing. But some people, I think, were kind of afraid to ask if that's what I normally wore. So I haven't done that since. But the students get a big kick out of it. It's something that they you know, enjoy asking questions about. I'm not a reenactor. I don't like the elements very much. I don't like cold weather and standing out in the freezing rain and things like that. So I don't do any reenacting, but it's kind of a neat thing to show up at school one day a year and be dressed in that outfit and talk about, you know, why they would have worn something this way, why they would have had a certain piece of equipment with them. And it really just starts a lot of different discussion. And then this year, we had kind of a special situation. I have a student that is the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of William Clark. And a lot of times I'll have students come up and say, I'm related to George Washington or I'm related to Abraham Lincoln, but they don't have any family documentation, so you don't really know if it's true. Well, in this particular case, we're studying the American Revolution, and we were talking about George Rogers Clark, and this particular student came up and said, Mr. Langhorst, is that a relative of William Clark? And I said, well, yes, George Rogers Clark is the older brother of William Clark from the Core Discovery. And she said, well, that's my great-great-great-great-great-uncle. And at that point, everything started to kind of click, and I was like, whoa, that means you're directly related to William Clark. And she went on to talk about how her family has attended many different activities and ceremonies, especially with the recent 200-year anniversary of the expedition. And this next week, I actually have her mom coming in, and she's going to talk to several of the classes about their family connection to William Clark, and she has various artifacts and things like that. So it was kind of unique this year when I was able to dress in period clothes and actually have one of the true blood descendants of one of the members of the Core Discovery. So that was kind of interesting this year. So that's kind of, you know, how we teach about the Core Discovery. You know, I think you could easily spend an entire semester. I think it'd be a fascinating college class to be able to take an entire semester on just the Lewis and Clark expedition. You know, we have to basically cram it into about a week or so. Basically, last week was kind of like our Lewis and Clark week. But those are just some of the highlights. There's a lot of things online. Another video that I forgot to mention that's in the show notes. There is a PBS video on Lewis and Clark as well. That's one of the videos that's by Ken Burns. That's also an excellent video, very, very good. And one of the best things about that video is the site that PBS has created to go along with that DVD. One of the things that PBS has really done, a very high-quality job of in the last 10 years is when they create a documentary, they really do a lot of things on the interactive website to allow teachers to use it. I use the PBS Lewis and Clark website quite a bit for information. For example, for each member of the Core Discovery, they have a nice kind of one-page summary on their life. And so there's various activities I've done in the past where I'll split the students up into groups, and then each group will research one or two different individuals on the Core of Discovery. And so many times we get, you know, we don't get too much beyond William Clark and Meriwether Lewis and Sacagawea, and we might talk about Charbonneau, we might talk a little bit about Crusade, but we don't really, or in York, we don't really get into too many of the other stories, and there's some really fascinating stories of the other men that were on the expedition. So I use the PBS site for research and doing the short little biographies. They've got some great lesson plans, some great classroom activities. I believe that's the site that has a really good activity on how they translated from some of the Native American tribes into English. Because a lot of people think, oh, you know, they're able to translate directly from Shoshone into English, but that wasn't the case. They had to translate from Shoshone into sometimes another Native American language, and then into French, and then from French into English. So there's an exercise about that. So tons and tons of resources, a lot of things out there for you to use, and I think it'll be really fun for the next couple of years, especially to teach about Lewis and Clark, because of so many of the things that we basically benefit from when they celebrated the 200-year anniversary. So if you have any questions, any comments, any additional things that you do when you teach Lewis and Clark, maybe you have a great activity, if you could send us a link or describe that, that would be awesome. And again, you can comment directly to the blog post at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com, or if you would like to email me at speakingofhistory@gmail.com, and then I can pass that along to all the other listeners. So happy teaching about Lewis and Clark. It's a great story. When I'm describing things to my students, I always tell them it's, you know, almost something that Hollywood would not even put into a movie. The fact that they only lost one person on the entire expedition, and that was due to a medical emergency that basically couldn't have been helped even if he would have been in the hospital at the time. Sergeant Floyd probably would have passed away even if he would have been in the state-of-the-art hospital at that time. The fact that women played such an important role in saving the expedition in some very crucial times throughout the expedition. I mean, there's just tons of storylines and tons of things that can really generate student interest. So thanks for listening, and until next time, remember, history is so much more than just a bunch of boring old dead guys. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.